Hi, and good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world. This is a breaking news that we really wanted to bring to you today, and that is that California schools are dropping the grades D and F. And so for those of you who are not familiar with the education system in the United States, D is sort of the bottom that you can get while still sort of passing, whereas F is a complete failure and you have not passed the course. So California is having such a hard time passing students that they decided in some of their largest districts to do away with these letter grades. And that's a really big problem. And it's indicative of a much, much bigger systematic problem that we have in the education system here in the United States. So Ross, what is your take on this?
Well, I very carefully listened to and looked at what a number of the school officials are actually saying. Mm-hmm. And saying, thanks to the pandemic, thanks to distance learning, where kids sat bored in front of their computer, with no motivation, no interaction, they want to re-engage them. And they're thinking that if they do away with D's and F's, that this is going to work in terms of re-engaging students in systems that school systems that they already found boring and inadequate.
Right.
Going, good luck. You know, in every one of these stories that we've done over the past year, there's always the news behind the news. What's right. really going on? That's what the superficial take on this is. And my take on it is, what is education really all about? What's it for? Let me ask you, what is education really for?
Well, there's what I really believe education is for. And what I believe education is actually for is for really nurturing human beings, really nurturing young minds, teaching people how to really thrive in the world, understanding the world around us. And more than that, understanding how to learn to think. Because more than any other skill or ability, you need to know how to think your way through problems. Because that's what we're faced with in life. We're faced with problems that need solutions over and over and over and over again. And if you don't know how to think your way through a problem, you're less equipped to be able to thrive in your life. So that's what I think education should be. What education actually is in this country and in many other countries, and I'm interested in your take on this also, is a way to teach people how to fit into the industrialized world, to fit into.
Let's go a little slower in
okay,
this one.
Sure.
Let me give people some background, because you already know this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a certified teacher.
Yeah.
And I spent 4 years in and out of elementary classrooms. I thought my career was going to be all education. And I was involved with Title I and Title III programs, which were the most innovative programs at the time.
Yeah.
By the way, they all dried up. All the innovative thinking was put on a shelf someplace. And it really left us in a position of, what really do we want people to, how do we want people to benefit from being educated?
Right.
And I think you're really right on it. We want people to be so well, first of all, we want them to love to learn.
Right.
So they become lifelong learners. Because what's the only constant in the universe?
It's change.
And how do you adapt? And how do you adapt to change?
Right.
And what we find is that an education system was put in place to prepare the population to work for the wealthy. They're going, what? That's not, yes, it is. That's the basis of this. And you know it. You showed me the article on it.
Absolutely. So to dive a little deeper into that, the education system, the way that it is in the United States and has sort of been extrapolated to other countries, quite frankly, I think in a lot of ways, we provided a template for a bit of a failing education system globally. But that is that the education system, the way that it is set up right now, was actually founded because large corporations, when they began needing factory workers, they needed people who could do basic reading, basic writing, and who understood how to obey schedules, who understood how to obey authority figures. So this is actually
how to comply.
How to comply.
How do you like that one?
And it's true. And it's actually fairly well documented. If you want to do a deep dive into where did the education system, the way that it's set up right now, where did it come from? Because it's not set up for free thought. It's not set up for understanding how to think well. It's not even necessarily set up to teach you how to understand what you're good at or what your best contribution is.
Here are the things that we knew. And I've known this for a very long time. By age 14, if a person is taught how to think, what they're focusing on is what serves my life.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what serves some rich person's life. It's what serves my life. And a 14-year-old is perfectly capable of looking at, well, what am I good at?
Yeah.
And they can create a career path for themselves. And you say, but they're only 14. 14-year-olds, when well-educated, can be really effective human beings.
Yeah.
And so we looked at models as to, and actually we were executing on them, how can 14-year-olds figure out what to do with their life? Now, if it's to be a plumber, and that works for them, that takes them on a particular path. If it's to be an engineer, that takes them on a different path. But it's all about serving their unique individual life.
Right.
So how do you gather information? How do you think about that information? How do you process it? How do you experiment with your own life to see if it works for you or not? And then you go and do it and see. Now, is that what education is about? Or is it about, here's how to prepare for the test? By the way, we're going to be, your teacher's evaluated on how well you score on these standardized tests.
That is a gift, I think. Was it from George W. Bush, The No Child Left Behind?
The CORE program.
Yeah, that left almost every child behind, despite the name.
And it was astonishing how effective that was at harming education in the United States.
It really was. And we're getting to see right now just how harmed that is. So
yeah.
I also want to discuss the labor shortage that's going on in schools right now, because, you know, we can talk all day long about the system, you know, and re-engaging students by, you know, not really making it possible for them to fail. But there's a bigger fundamental problem that's caused kids to disengage from school. And one of those things is there's a huge teacher shortage. And when you look at those districts have tens of thousands of job openings that they just can't fill. And they can't fill them for a couple of reasons. The first is that being a teacher, although might be a calling and emotionally rewarding, it doesn't necessarily pay very well. And in some cases, it doesn't even pay living wage to somebody who wants to be a teacher.
Let me add something here, because I was in that circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the teacher's position. There's you as a teacher, and you are, if you're dedicated, you really want to teach your children something. Then there's the parents.
Yeah.
Now, the parents are kind of coming in, and if they don't like what's going on, they're going to hammer the teacher.
Right.
So then they go to the principal, who is supposed to stand up for them, and so the parents are now going to hammer the principal, who's now going to hammer you, the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, where's the win situation here? Now, I was party to that, seeing that over and over and over again. And so the teacher's in an absolutely no-win situation. And by the way, not only are they underpaid, they're overworked. They work more hours, and a whole lot of that work is busy work preparing kids for tests and grading papers. compliance, do good on the paper, as opposed to creating individual or unique learning experiences for individual children.
There's a video that I should have gotten. I'm going to go see if I can find it really quickly while we're discussing this. But it's a video of teachers. I think they're on an ice skating rink in the middle of maybe a hockey game or something. I'll find this video. And it's them grabbing cash to pay for their own school supplies. So teachers have to actually pay for their own school supplies to prepare for their classrooms. And the way that these teachers are being treated is degrading. And, you know, these are the people that are teaching the next generation. These are the people who are responsible for the children of an entire nation.
Morality.
Absolutely. So let me ethics, see if I can find this really quickly.
Culture.
Talk about it.
And if you take a look at someplace like Sweden, where educators are honored, as opposed to the United States, where, you know, it's kind of a second-tier career. Mm-hmm. It clearly doesn't. It pays like 65% as much as someone with an engineering degree or any other degree. I know that's one of the reasons I left it, because my first year out of education, I earned three times as much money.
Wow. Going,
now, was I supposed to stay in that career when something else would pay three times as much?
Right.
And I talked to so many teachers who were just fed up with the whole situation. Dishonored,
right.
No pay, no supplies. Just goes on and on.
Okay, let me show this video really quickly, because this I felt not good watching it, and I think you guys are gonna have a very similar reaction to it. Oh, I won't let me. There it goes. All right, this is a video from The Guardian. All right, let me add it to the stream, guys. Sorry, bear with me for 1 second.
Let me talk about funding while you're looking for it.
Okay. All right.
Never mind. Okay.
All right. Let me play this for you guys. Okay. As you guys can see, that's a pretty rough gig.
Somebody donated the money, and the teachers, they're scooping it up so they can have supplies for their classroom.
Yeah, that's that really was hard to watch. But the bottom line of all of this is that this is where the school system's at. And I want to bring up another topic in terms of this, and that is that a school superintendent, a deputy superintendent for the California Department of Education, just came under fire because he's been pulling a $160,000 paycheck from the California education system while he runs his very own consulting, psychology consulting company in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. So he's not even in California, and he's pulling $160,000 salary from California. And not only is that happening, but he was a friend of somebody higher up than him. So there wasn't even a public job posting for this job. He just got the job because he was a friend of somebody higher up than him. So what we're watching is we're watching students being failed across the entire board and looking at it as a way to re-engage students by removing their ability to fail. They're already failing. By removing their ability to fail, that doesn't stop them from failing. It just stops it from being actually dealt with, because it paves over the problem. And that's what I think the biggest takeaway is from this, is that instead of actually handling the problem and doing away with distance learning, making teaching actually something worth being and putting real legitimate focus on student success.
Let me give you something else.
Okay.
One of the reasons, pardon me, this is such a serious topic, I have to kind of laugh at the ridiculousness of it. One of the things that the California people said is, well, if we give them D's and F's, they won't be able to get into our institutions of higher education. Oh,
yes.
Now, the military-industrial education complex.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've been talking about this for a number of years. And you take a look at the Taj Mahals of universities around, and you go, my God, they've spent $150 million on the buildings and $50 million on the faculty.
Right.
There's been another $35 million on security and the rest of it. And the faculty, and I know any number of faculty people who are scrambling to make a decent living working at a university.
Right.
And we say, you mean in the military-industrial education complex has that much power? It is a hundreds of billion dollar industry. And let's call it what it is. There's the textbooks, outrageously expensive. There's the facilities, outrageously expensive. And too little time goes into the teachers, caring for them, paying them appropriately, giving them honored positions, and educational materials for the kids. But boy, are the facilities nice if you're in an upper class neighborhood. Now, there's this huge disparity between minority neighborhoods and majority neighborhoods where there's wealth. Huge.
Well, in terms of universities, is that what you're talking about?
I'm talking about public schools right now.
Oh, public schools. Gotcha. Yes.
And so going back to the universities for just a minute, because I happen to know a whole lot about that, having worked at five of them.
Mm-hmm.
The schools are afraid of losing funding. They take any number of truly unqualified students just to stay alive.
Well, and here's how they do it. They saddle those same students who were not necessarily qualified to get into the university with massive amounts of student loan debt. And student loan debt is something we have to talk about because it's the biggest debt that we have in this country. Student loan debt is astronomical. And so, you know, you're giving students who really have no business necessarily being in a college like that, right? So they're in a university that's that expensive because it'll saddle them with student loan debt. And I had student loan debt. All of my friends had student loan debt. I mean, everyone across the board had student loan debt. And the problem with that is that it's not interest free. So there's heavy interest on the student loan debt, and it saddles a very young person. You know, this is somebody who's 18, 19, 20 years old with student loan debt for the next decade to the next rest of their lives. And it's all, so you're right. So the university can make that money because it's not the student that's paying that money. It's the student that's paying it over time, but it's the loans that are actually paying the university at that time.
Right.
So bottom line here, to recap, there's a massive failure going on. There's a massive failure going on in terms of distance learning. Over the last 2 years, I don't know that anything has harmed students more than the government's reaction to what's happened over the last 2 years. You can say that it's the pandemic, but really, it's the government's reaction to it. And we're starting to see the costs of the government's reaction. And the government's across the world. It's not just in the United States. But right. Here, we're very acutely seeing the cost of that that was not done in the cost-benefit analysis. And you say, okay, well, we needed to save people. Absolutely. Yes, every life is precious. And also, there are only trade-offs. There is no solution that is a good solution for everybody. So it's very, very important when policymakers are making these types of policies to really take a look at what would the consequences be to our children of having them be out of school.
Let me raise something else here that I think really is the bottom line to all of this. Because as you know, all the years in education I thought about this extensively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about China a lot. Oh, what a surprise. They would have to come into this conversation for just one sentence. Their focus has been to raise the population out of severe poverty into reasonable prosperity. Okay. And what this is about quality of life.
Absolutely.
And so if education is really going to be effective, the bottom line is it is going to lead to quality of life changes for the people. One last factoid. If a young person doesn't know how to read by the end of first grade, you can build a jail cell for them. That's what the national statistics are telling us.
Hold on. Hey guys, are you having buffering problems? I'm seeing in the chat there's some really severe buffering problems. Can you guys put in the chat if you can actually see us? I think that there's some pretty severe buffering problems. Okay, I'm sorry guys. I don't know what happened there. I don't know why it's having buffering problems like this. But we will wrap it up here. Okay. So some of you guys are getting us. Okay, good. Smooth. Okay, good. Thank you guys. Thank you for letting us know that. Okay. Yes. Sorry. Please get to your last piece of information.
What we have is $850 billion going to national defense.
Right.
And does that really serve your third grade student who can't read, who doesn't like school? It doesn't. What I'm really talking about is a re-emphasis or a refocusing of our officials to quality of life issues, not war machine.
Well, but you know, you look at, so Nancy Pelosi tweeted over Thanksgiving that it was the reason that Thanksgiving dinner was so much more expensive this year than last year was it's the turkey farmers. It's the turkey farmer's fault that it's more expensive. And she called for, you know, we're going to do a deep dive into why these turkey farmers are so greedy. Well, you know, the truth is Congress during this entire time, you know, it's shown over and over again that they invest in these companies that they then push. Pfizer is one of them. Look at the number of Congress members who are invested in the companies that are pushing these things right now. And regardless of what you think about whether they're effective or not, I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about the money involved here. These politicians, their kids aren't going to public school.
They're going to private schools. They have special deals with the big universities to get in.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about hypocrisy for just one minute.
Right.
Those greedy turkey farmers, they're trying to get ahead. They're trying to make money. Because Nancy Pelosi has made over $110 million by capitalizing on her special position in Congress.
Yep.
How much hypocrisy can we tolerate?
I don't know. I don't know, but I mean, I'm seeing the world, all of us get really fed up with it because they're not even hiding it anymore. It's in plain sight. And so I posted something on my Twitter. By the way, follow us on Twitter. I'm at Alchemy of E and David is at D Walalu. But follow us on Twitter. But I posted that in one small county in, I think it was Wisconsin or Minnesota or one of those states, that there were over 100,000 voters who had been registered and actively voting for over 100 years. Okay. That's not... That's not real. Those aren't real people who have been voting for over 100 years. Those aren't real people. So you know, if you look at voting even, there's so much deep corruption in it that you can't even trust that who you're voting for is the right person. Because who are those people who have been voting for 100 years? Who have they been voting for? And you know,
also, if you're an educator, let's keep it the way it is. We don't like change. We want to keep it the way it is to make sure our jobs are secure, mm-hmm. whether we're competent or not. And maybe we could leave it at that.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. We, on our membership there on this Friday, there's going to be a presentation. It's the new military global order. So the military global order is shifting. And so check it out, geopoliticsinconflict.com. There's also a Q&A tomorrow at 11, and it's already up, so you can set the notification for it. We can't get to all of the questions. I read, I see all of your questions, and we can't even get to a fraction of them on Fridays. So we just wanted to give this to you, just an extra Q&A during the week that's just for questions, whatever it is that you guys have. And it's tomorrow. And of course, follow us on Twitter. We love talking to you guys. We love interacting with you guys. And as always, till next time, go ahead.
Stay informed.